Hello, I'm Wayne, and here's a special episode for Christmas time. It's not a Christmas special, I did one of those last year, and it was so good, I'm not doing another one. Instead, you're going to get this compilation of Adrian Smith's book, by popular demand, and it starts off with me introducing it. So, I thought that might be a bit strange, so instead, here's me introducing Adrian's book. Here it is. Enjoy it. Now, one of the differences about this album is that Adrian Smith's on guitar. And you may remember last week that I played an advert for his forthcoming book. He got in touch with me because he was quite surprised at how I got hold of this. However, he revealed that he's actually writing another book, and the one that's coming out in September was written years ago. So since doing that, he started writing a different book, and it's a children's book. And he said, can he read some sections out on the podcast to get some feedback from fans? So I said, yeah. So here he is, reading from the children's book that's in progress.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith, and here's an extract from my new book that I'm writing. It's aimed at children aged between 8 and 12, and as yet, it's untitled. Chapter 1, The Mysterious Box. It was a Saturday morning, and Adrian woke up excited that he didn't have to go to school. "Hooray and hurrah," he said, as he skipped down the stairs to the breakfast table. "What are you so excited about?" asked his father from behind his newspaper. "It's Saturday, and I'm going to sit and watch TV all day," answered Adrian, buttering some toast. "You will do no such thing," exclaimed his father sternly. "I'm not having you look back at your childhood as being a load of wasted years. I want you to do your chores, and then I have something to give you." Adrian sulkily set about doing his chores. He polished his shoes, washed the dishes, pulled up some weeds, and fed the fishes. "Well done, Adrian," said his father. "Now come and look at this." They walked into a room that Adrian had never seen before. His father took a box down from on top of a bookcase. He blew off some dust before putting it on the table. "This belonged to your great-grandfather, Adrian, and now it is yours." "What could it be?" wondered Adrian. "What delights lurked within this box? Perhaps it was treasure from the coasts of gold across the seven seas." He opened the box with shaking hands, and he saw that inside was an old fishing rod. "Oh," said Adrian, disappointed. "Now you can go fishing," said his father. "Try it out over the park." Adrian skipped down the street, holding his new fishing rod, and went to the park. Standing near the pond were his chums, Dave, Nico, Bruce and Steve. "Hello," they all chorused.
"I say, is that a sword?" asked Bruce.
"No, it's a fishing rod," said Adrian.
"Let's catch some fish," roared Nico, banging his toy drum.
Suddenly, Dave started crying.
"What's the matter?" asked Steve, putting his arm around his chum. "I don't think we should hurt the fish," Dave said. So they all went and had an ice cream instead. On the way home, the gang heard a scream. It was old Mrs. Stratton in her front garden. She had a son called Dennis, but he wasn't allowed to come out and play.
"What's the matter, Mrs. Stratton?" asked Bruce politely.
"Our cat is stuck up the tree and won't come down."
"Oh no, what shall we do?" roared Nico, banging his toy drum.
Dave started crying again. He was sad that the cat was stuck and that the loud drumming might scare it.
"I've got an idea," said Adrian. "I could use my fishing rod to hook the cat's collar and lift him safely from the tree." Everyone cheered and patted Adrian on the back, except Dennis, who was scowling from an upstairs window. Adrian asked to sit on Bruce's shoulders to get a better angle, but nobody understood the joke. He cast the rod, and it landed perfectly to bring the cat down to the ground into the arms of old Mrs. Stratton.
"Thank you so much," she said. "Here's half a crown for your trouble."
This was amazing. Adrian only ever got sixpence for doing the chores at home. As the five chums skipped down the street arm in arm, Adrian knew he was at the start of a new adventure with his trusty fishing rod.
On last week's show, I looked at The Ides of March, which was track one on The Killers album, and I've had a few comments about what was discussed on that show. I had a lot of interest in the fact that Adrian Smith has been reading from his children's book that he's been writing. This was quite shocking news, and I don't think it's covered anywhere else on the internet, so this is an exclusive for the show. Some people gave feedback, which is what Adrian Smith wanted, because it's a work in progress. I had a message from Lorraine Baines, who said that maybe you should change the names of the characters in case that people think it's a real story about Iron Maiden when they were boys. I've also had comments from someone called Goldie Wilson, who says that Adrian Smith mentioned that the book was aimed at those aged 8 to 12 years old, but when he played the recording to his 12-year-old son, he was bored, and he said that it didn't resonate with him, and he couldn't identify with the characters or the plot. So I'll pass these comments on to Adrian Smith, and maybe before he gets to the final cut, he'll make some changes based on your feedback.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith, and this is an extract from the book I'm writing for children aged between 8 and 12, and I still don't have a title for it, but hopefully you like it. Chapter 4, A Jolly Spiffing Time. It was the school summer holidays, and our five heroes had been having lots of fun in the sunny weather. They had played in the park, watched the parade, had plenty of picnics and iced lemonade. We joined them one hot afternoon round Adrian's house, sat in the garden playing cards. "I say," piped up Bruce, "I hear the fairground is back in town this week." "Oh, goody goody gumdrops," boomed Nico, banging his toy drum. Dave started to cry. "I don't think my dad will let me go," he said solemnly. His father had a suspicion of the fairground folk and said they were villains, cutpurses and scoundrels. "Well, if we go now, he won't find out," said Steve. They all became excited at this idea, and they tidied away the cards. Adrian gathered his fishing rod, and off they went, skipping down the road to the wasteland where the fairground was. As they approached the entrance, they saw old Mrs. Stratton and her son Dennis. He was eating candy floss, and they seemed to be leaving the fair. "I didn't expect to see you here," said Adrian, as Dennis was not usually allowed to go out of the house. Dennis began to answer. "Don't speak with your mouth full, Dennis," his mother interrupted. "I told him he could come here and go on only one ride. He chose the bumper cars. The silly boy didn't realise that it was too early, so nobody else was on them with him, so he just drove round on his own." "He should have chosen the helter-skelter," said Bruce, as the Strattons walked away. And off he raced to have a go on the big slide. Nico and Steve decided that they wanted to go on the ghost train, which left Dave and Adrian wandering about. "Look," Dave shouted, "a hooker duck stand." They went over, and Dave paid tuppence to the stall holder to have a go. He was given a stick with a hoop on the end, which he had to use to lift one of the toy ducks from the water. He tried for a long time, but he couldn't get the stick to hook a duck. "You can pay again to try a different stick," said the stall holder with a grin. Dave paid the man and tried again, but it was no good. The stall holder chuckled and walked away to serve another customer. "This is dreadful," Dave said. "I have spent all my weekly pocket money on this stupid game, and I wanted to win one of those cuddly bunny rabbits." He started to cry. "My dad was right about the fairground," he wailed. "Well, I have an idea," said Adrian. He got his own fishing rod and cast it towards the toy ducks. With a whoosh and a swoop and a hint of magic, he connected with a duck and brought it smoothly into Dave's arms. He quickly put the fishing rod to one side and shouted, "Hooray and hurrah!" The stallholder came back to see what all the noise was and looked annoyed to see Dave holding a duck. "What's the game?" he started. "You must be to blame for this," he said, eyeing Adrian suspiciously. "No point asking what's the game," said Adrian. "No point asking who's to blame." "I'd like the cuddly bunny rabbit, please," said Dave, interrupting these wise words. The man gave the bunny to Dave, and then the two chums raced off quickly to join the others. They all skipped home with so many exciting adventures to tell each other, of ghosts and slides and bunny rabbits, and of course, Adrian's magic fishing rod.
Some people are sending in more feedback about Adrian Smith's book. It's a children's book that he's writing, and he's been reading some of his chapters to us as a sort of preview and as a method of getting feedback for him. Now, I've had several comments about this. Last week he read out chapter 4, which was called A Jolly Spiffing Time,
And I had someone moaning that where were chapters 2 and 3? Because, you know, he started with chapter 1 2 weeks ago and then he skipped to chapter 4. And this person was annoyed that they may have missed out on some integral plot detail between chapters 1 and 4. Well, he was just going to read out selected chapters. He didn't say he was going to go through the whole book on my podcast because that would take a lot of time. I mean, if he's got 20 chapters, that's 2 albums worth of podcasts with him reading from his book. And I'm not comfortable giving him that exposure, although it is a good exclusive to have for the show. I had more comments. Someone said there's not enough detail in the book. I mean, what card game were they playing in chapter 4? They'd like to know. And someone has also said, how can you have a book with no title? So that's obviously causing some concern. Here's another one. Who is this Adrian Smith? And why is he reading a children's book on a podcast about Iron Maiden? Which is a bit strange. I don't know who that is and why they don't know who Adrian Smith is if they're listening to the podcast. I don't understand. So, yeah, mixed opinions, mainly with confusion and maybe some negativity. And I've passed these on to Adrian Smith. And as a result of that, he's confirmed that he won't be reading from his book in this episode. So this is quite disappointing. But he has assured me that he'll take the feedback on board, go away, and come back even stronger. So hopefully, maybe soon, he'll be back with a book with a title and maybe he'll try out some other passages with us. Now recently, we've had Adrian Smith joining us and he's been reading passages from a children's book he's writing. He had a week off last week and he'll explain why now.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith and I'd like to apologise to listeners for not being on the show last week. I was having a time out because I had to promote my other book. As a result of that, I wasn't able to do a reading for you. However, I'm back this week and I have a new chapter for you, so thank you for listening and thank you for your patience. I've had a look at some of your feedback and I think one of the things that stood out for me was somebody said that the book didn't have a title and that's okay. I'm not too concerned about that because you may know that Iron Maiden albums, we didn't start with a title. We had the songs first and then we agreed on the title last. So the title is very important. You'll notice from my biography that its title is Monsters of River and Rock, My Life as Iron Maiden's Compulsive Angler. So the title took me some time to come up with because I wanted something that told you exactly what the book was about. And I also wanted something catchy and memorable. So that will be important for me. So I appreciate your comments, but I will be thinking of a title further down the line. So here's the latest chapter that I'm going to read for you. Chapter 5, A Day at the Seaside. It was a scorcher of a day, and our 5 chums were sat together on the beach, sat in their bathing costumes. "Oh, I do like to be beside the seaside," said Nico, banging his drum. "Yes, it is awfully good," said Bruce. He was running around chasing seagulls. Adrian was fishing in a rock pool with his magic fishing rod, and Steve was reading a history book. Dave was building a sandcastle, and, with a flash of the spade, he created an impressive fortress. "Look at my castle," he shouted, and everyone gathered round. Even some ruffians from the nearby Penny Arcade were impressed, and there was much rejoicing. Sadly, Bruce hadn't heard this and was still chasing after seagulls, making cooing noises. He was looking skyward and raced straight through Dave's castle. Dave started to cry. Bruce was still riding through dust clouds and barren sandy wastes, and Dave suddenly got a feeling of déjà vu. "I'm sure this happened last summer," he wailed. Suddenly Bruce stopped and saw the mess he had created. Even Adrian's fishing rod could not salvage the situation. "I'm sorry," said Bruce. "Come on," said Steve. "Let's go and get some fish and chips." And they all cheered. So they all had a lovely supper, and Bruce bought Dave some extra mushy peas before they caught the bus home. Back in the village, the gang were full of happiness and skipped gaily down the streets. As they got closer to home, Steve suddenly stopped and pointed to a lamppost. "Look," he said with a fearful tone. "What is it?" asked Adrian. "Are you pointing at the bin being full?" "No," said Steve. They moved closer and saw that he was pointing to a sign attached to it. In big letters, it said the word missing. Underneath, there was a photograph of Dennis Stratton. Adrian dropped his fishing rod, Nico dropped his drumstick, Dave started to cry, and Bruce was feeling sick. "We have to find him," said Steve.
You'll be pleased to hear that Adrian Smith's got back in touch and, he's going to do another reading from his book. So here he is.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith, and this is another chapter that I'm going to read for you from my children's book. I finally got round to looking at all the feedback that was sent in a few weeks ago, and you may remember I commented on the lack of title. But I know that someone was upset that I'd skipped a few chapters, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to read chapter 2, so I hope that's okay. Chapter 2, The Rod in the Small Wood. Adrian was so pleased with his new fishing rod. Since helping old Mrs. Stratton get her cat down from the tree, he had used it in so many situations. He had used it to get a book down from off his bookcase without getting out of bed. He'd used it to get the biscuit tin down from the top shelf in the living room, where he usually couldn't reach it. He'd even hooked the foil wrapper off his Easter egg so that he could enjoy it. "It would have been quicker just to use your hands," said his father impatiently. But the egg had only half melted during this escapade, so Adrian wasn't too upset. He was keen to try out some new tricks in the outside world, so he met up with his chums in the small wood on the edge of the village. They were gathering logs, as Steve's father had sent him on a quest for firewood, and they all looked very serious. "Oh, look, it's Adrian," said Bruce, and the gang cheered and rushed over, patting Adrian on the back. "Oh, and he's bought his fishing rod again," said Nico. He was a bit sad, as he was the one who always carried an item around, and he was concerned that his drum was not as exciting now. "Yes, and now I can do loop-the-loops and other tricks with it," said Adrian proudly. "Oh, goody," said Nico, although he didn't sound very happy. Dave had given up crying for Lent, so he was becoming used to not reacting to arguments. He wanted to react, but there was no need for all those wasted tears. "Oh, go on then, show us a trick then," said Nico, banging his drum half-heartedly. Adrian leaned back, gave the rod a swish and a swoosh, and up it went, deep into the small wood. After a while, he jerked it back, and attached to the hook was a marvellous haul. 2 conkers, a comic, and a bag of gobstoppers. "Who could they belong to?" asked Steve. "Some simpleton, I imagine," said Bruce. "Isn't this stealing?" said Dave, his lower lip starting to tremble. "Let's leave them here," said Adrian, "and then hopefully the owner will find them again." Just then they heard a noise. It was Officer Riggs, the village policeman, approaching them on his penny farthing. "Hello, hello, what are you boys up to in the small wood?" he asked. "Nothing much," replied Bruce confidently. "Well, there's reports of thieves about," continued the officer, who seemed strangely to be giggling after every sentence. "Somebody has reported a missing comic and a bag of gobstoppers." "Interesting," said Steve. Dave started to shake and looked very guilty. "I say, what's that you have there?" asked the village bobby. "Oh, it's a bag of gobstoppers and a comic," said Adrian. Nico gave him a startled look. "Well, well, what a coincidence," said Officer Riggs, and off he rode on his penny farthing. "Well, that was a close escape," said Steve. "Let's leave the items here and run for it." They saw in the distance that Officer Riggs had stopped riding and seemed to be thinking. They all raced home in time for dinner, and they hoped that Officer Riggs would just find the items left by the tree and wouldn't come and speak to their parents. They all went to bed worried.
I had a comment from someone called Strickland, who actually got in touch a few episodes back, but I didn't read out his name, so I apologise for this. In that episode, I think it was the Murders in the Rue Morgue episode, he complained about Adrian Smith's book. He said that he was annoyed that Adrian Smith had missed out chapters 2 and 3, in case he'd missed out on some integral plot detail. He's got back in touch, because last week Adrian Smith did what he suggested and actually went back and allowed us to catch up with the events of Chapter 2. Now, this wasn't good enough for Strickland, and he's complaining again. He said that we were left on quite a cliffhanger in Chapter 5, where there was a missing boy poster
which suggested it was Dennis Stratton. And he was on the edge of his seat after this, and he tuned in on the next episode, only to find that we had a backstory, some sort of incident in the wood, and he wasn't happy about it, and he wants to know what happened to Dennis Stratton. Unfortunately, Adrian Smith's not impressed by your feedback, and he's not going to be reading in this episode. So I mentioned Adrian Smith being upset about the song tempo during the tour of 1988. And we've seen that on this show, haven't we? When he's been a bit upset about some of the feedback about his children's book that he's writing. And he had a break last week, so I suppose he could collect his thoughts and do a bit more writing. But luckily, he's back this week with a new chapter.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith, and I'm here to read another chapter from my children's book. Just because I've missed a couple of episodes, it doesn't mean I'm annoyed with the feedback, so please continue to send it. It would be very useful. I still don't have a title, but I shall carry on reading anyway, and maybe we'll get the title together. Chapter 6, Adrian Investigates. News of the disappearance of young Dennis Stratton had sent the village into a panic. Parents were keeping their children indoors, just in case there was some sort of prowler who was kidnapping children. Officer Riggs tried to calm the public down by addressing them at a village meeting, but he kept giggling while delivering the serious speech, which made people angrier. Old Mrs. Stratton could be seen walking the streets every night, looking for her son, holding a candle that illuminated her dried tears. "I wish there was something I could do," said Adrian to himself. He saw old Mrs. Stratton pass by his house every night. He was missing his chums by being indoors, and felt sorry for Dave, who must be crying a lot under the watch of his stern father. Adrian had so many questions. How had Dennis gone missing? He rarely left the house, and never on his own. Was he taken by burglars, or was he accosted in the street while old Mrs. Stratton wasn't looking? Who would see someone's son and steal them? He wished he knew what Officer Riggs had found out. He decided he would sneak out of the house and try to speak to old Mrs. Stratton when she came by on her nightly search. Later that night, Adrian waited in some nearby shrubbery with his trusty fishing rod. As old Mrs. Stratton approached, he stood up. She saw him through the bushes, her mouth open wide. "Who's there?" she shouted. "It's me, Adrian," the boy replied. "Oh yes, I remember you," she said. "You rescued our cat from up the tree a couple of chapters ago." "That's right," said Adrian proudly. "And I'd love to help you find Dennis. I love helping." "Well, I have been feeling down, depressed and lonely," said old Mrs. Stratton. "Perhaps you can come back for a chat." Adrian jumped at the chance to find out more about this mystery. He walked with old Mrs. Stratton back to her house. Old Mrs. Stratton opened the door into a dimly lit hallway. The house smelt curiously of leather and stale pies. On the wall were photographs of Dennis and the cat. Their eyes seemed to follow Adrian as he walked into the lounge. The boy shuddered. "Wait here and I'll get you an iced lemonade," said old Mrs. Stratton. Adrian sat on the sofa. He felt sorry for old Mrs. Stratton, all alone in this big house, with nobody to talk to except a cat. "So when did you know Dennis was missing?" asked Adrian, when old Mrs. Stratton returned. "It was when he didn't come down for dinner last Wednesday," she replied. "I banged the dinner gong and he didn't appear. I called up the stairs and there was no answer. I went into his room and there was nobody there." "Was the window open?" asked Adrian, pleased with himself at this question. Perhaps he would be a detective when he was older. "No," said old Mrs. Stratton, and her head suddenly began to get bigger. "There was a dancing sausage in his bed, though," she said. Adrian felt a little queer and realised something strange was happening. The room started to swirl. "Well then," said old Mrs. Stratton, as Adrian blacked out, "at last we have a suitable replacement for Dennis." Adrian awoke in a dark chamber. He had no idea where he was or what time it was. He recalled how he had been speaking to old Mrs. Stratton. "Adrian?" He heard a voice. Emerging from the darkness was a head with no eyes. Adrian thought he was about to scream. Then a pair of hands brushed away a fringe to reveal a full face. It was Dennis Stratton.
I had some comments about Adrian Smith's story, and I had a few concerns about it, because some said it was quite scary, and some were saying that maybe he should adjust the age range of his book, because it said that it was aimed at children aged between 8 and 12, and it seemed to take quite a dark turn. Now, Uncle Steve, who does a podcast and has contributed before with some comments and poems, he loved it. He said that he enjoyed the huge left turn the story took. Now, I think he's older than 12 years old. I'm pretty sure that you have to be 13 or over to legally produce a podcast, even in Texas. But anyway, let's see where Adrian Smith's book goes next.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith, and here's another extract from the children's book I'm currently writing. Chapter 7, The Prisoner. Adrian's eyes adjusted to the darkness. He found he was in a small square room, with Dennis Stratton looking at him. There were no windows, and only a small bit of light came through the outline of a door and its small keyhole. Old Mrs. Stratton must have taken them both captive and brought them here. But why? What is happening? He whispered.
I don't know, said Dennis Stratton. Adrian was surprised at this noise. He hadn't heard Dennis's voice before. Normally he was silent, apart from when he sang backup vocals in the school choir. Adrian had replaced Dennis with the main parts, which had meant that they had found it hard to be friends. Dennis continued with his story. I went to bed on Tuesday, and then I woke up here. Adrian noticed that Dennis was wearing pyjamas. He may not have washed since then, or even eaten. I wonder where we are, Adrian said. He tried to look through the keyhole. He could see that the door led to another room, but he couldn't see much else. Suddenly, he heard movement, and saw old Mrs. Stratton approaching the door. Dennis crept back in fear as a small hatch opened and a tray was pushed through. There were two pies on two plates and a jug of water. Old Mrs. Stratton didn't say a word from the other side and just walked off. I don't know who it is who is keeping us here, said Dennis. They don't even give us baked beans with our pie. Adrian wondered whether to tell Dennis that it was his own mother who had kidnapped him, but he thought he would wait. As Adrian finished his pie, his leg touched something. It was his fishing rod. What a stroke of luck! Old Mrs. Stratton hadn't taken it from him, and now he could use its magic to escape. He looked through the keyhole. Perhaps he could thread the line through it, and maybe it could find the key to the door. Adrian looked sullen. The keys were probably among old Mrs. Stratton's petticoats, rather than left in plain view. Suddenly he heard a yelp. Dennis was in the far corner, holding his finger. I just caught my finger on this, he said. Adrian went and looked. There seemed to be a nail sticking out of the wall. The surface on this wall was smoother than the rest of the chamber, and the nail had been hammered in from the other side. Adrian felt around the area and found a thin gap stretching upwards. A secret door, perhaps. But the handle must also be on the other side. Now it was time to use his fishing rod. He managed to get the line through the gap, and with a twist and a pull and a hooray and hurrah, Adrian connected and felt the handle move downward and the door opened in on the chamber. They moved forward to examine this new room. It looked like they were inside a wardrobe and had entered through a back panel. There were several pairs of trousers hanging on a rail, red leather ones, black and white striped lycra, all sorts of strange garments. How curious, said Adrian. Wait, he suddenly shouted. Dennis was about to open the door of the wardrobe into some new strange world. Adrian carefully closed the panel that he had opened. Now, if old Mrs. Stratton returned, she would get a nasty shock to find that they'd escaped, and she wouldn't be able to follow them. Right, now we can go, said Adrian, and together they opened the wardrobe door.
I've had some more comments about Adrian Smith's children's book, and we've had a treat, haven't we, with him reading some chapters from his work in progress. And guess what? It's Goldie Wilson again. Now, you may remember that it was him who complained about the intended age range for the book and that his son, who was 12, was bored by it. And once again, he's complaining.
even though he's enjoying the book, he says that we've missed out chapter 3. We did go back further to my comments and chapter 2, The Rod in the Small Wood. But there's a gap between this and chapter 4, which was a jolly spiffing time. And he's keen to know what happened in that chapter, in case there's some clues about old Mrs. Stratton and the disappearance of children and other events that are happening. Now, Adrian Smith's answered this question for me, and he said he's not happy with putting every chapter on because some people might be recording it and maybe they'll leak it before it actually goes to print. And he is concerned that it is a draft and the final version might be quite different. And he says that this is similar to being in Iron Maiden, where you record demo versions that are quite different to the final produced, polished version, and then they become bootlegs. And he doesn't want this with his children's book. He just wants the final version. So he's going to be a bit more cautious now because of these comments. So once again, Goldie Wilson, you've ruined it for the masses. And there's no Adrian Smith this week. I was delighted to hear from Adrian Smith recently. I thought he'd left because some people got annoyed at his stories and that the structure wasn't right or he'd missed chapters out. But he's got back in touch. And here's another extract from his children's book.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith. Glad to be back with a new chapter from my forthcoming children's book. Hope you like it. Chapter 8, Those Damned Children. Those damned children, said Officer Riggs, as he watched the boys walk away from the village police station. They kept coming in and asking him awkward questions. He never expected to have a case like this. Two missing boys, with no clues and no explanation. He thought being a policeman would be fun, with days spent doodling pictures in his notebook and nights spent cycling through lamppost-lit streets, laughing and pretending to look important. Now he had the friends of Adrian and Dennis visiting him daily and asking him for updates, and God knows he wanted to go home. It had been Bruce and Steve who had visited the constable. Nico was being kept indoors by his parents, and Dave was too tearful. They were all feeling very sad. They missed their chum Adrian. Recently, it was Bruce's birthday, and he had invited all his friends, but it was upsetting to have an empty chair where Adrian would have usually sat, whooping with joy at all the jelly and ice cream. Bruce had invited another boy to the party, called Yannick, as a replacement for Adrian, but it wasn't the same without him. "When will we hear some news?" asked Steve angrily. Bruce shrugged. He didn't want to answer, in case tears came to his eyes. They had been round to speak to Adrian's father, but he wouldn't let them look round Adrian's room for clues. "That's for Officer Riggs to do," he had said sternly. "Perhaps you should go and talk to old Mrs. Stratton," said Bruce. "I'm not so sure," said Steve. He thought this was a good idea, but he wasn't sure about old Mrs. Stratton. He'd actually forgotten that Dennis was missing. "I'll toss a coin," said Bruce. "If it's heads, we'll go and speak to old Mrs. Stratton. If it's tails, we'll go to the ice cream parlour for a jolly spiffing time." As the coin spiralled into the air, a voice came into Steve's head. "Do you feel lucky or do you feel scared?" As Steve pictured a spoonful of raspberry ripple ice cream, the coin landed. It was heads.
I'm pleased to see that Adrian Smith's been back in touch this week with another chapter from his children's book he's writing.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith. You may know that I've got my angling book out next month, and I'm very excited about that. But I'm going to continue here and read an extract from my forthcoming children's book, which is a work in progress. Chapter 9, Prisoners in the Snow. Adrian frowned and Dennis shivered as the wardrobe door slowly opened and revealed a land of ice and snow. They stepped forward like strangers in a strange land, lost and far from home. Adrian loved snow, but now is not the time to build a snowman. "Let's go this way," he said, seeing a path in the distance. Dennis followed, but he wanted to go back. At least it was warm in the prison chamber, and there were pies. "Why don't we just go back and look in the wardrobe for some mittens and scarves?" he said. "Great idea," said Adrian. As they turned back, a great icy gust of wind blew hard and shut the wardrobe door with a bang. "Blast," said Adrian. "I can't open it. We'll have to carry on and see if there's some sort of way out." They walked along the snowy path as it stretched into a forest. It was very quiet. They had walked for a long time before the tall trees gave way
and they were stood in a clearing. In the middle was a circular pond, which amazingly wasn't frozen over.
"Water, water, everywhere," said Dennis, who was very thirsty.
He raced to the pond, but as he got closer, he suddenly stopped.
"What is it?" said Adrian.
"Take a look in the pool, and what do you see?" said Dennis. Adrian came over and looked. In the water, he saw an image of his chums, Steve and Bruce, talking to Officer Riggs.
"We want information," they said. "Information. Information. Who are you?" asked Officer Riggs.
Adrian reached his hand into the water, and the image disappeared into a ripple. It didn't feel like water. It felt like his hand was submerged in another time, another place. He wondered if the pool was some sort of magic portal. Now in the water, they could see an image of old Mrs. Stratton looking for them.
"My poor mother," said Dennis.
Adrian still didn't have the heart to tell him that it was she who had taken the boys captive. Adrian decided that he would plunge his fishing rod into the pool to see what happened. He felt it sink down into what seemed like a black abyss, and then he felt a tug on the line. He tried to reel it back in, but it seemed too heavy. The boys looked into the pool and saw the image of old Mrs. Stratton holding on tightly to the other end of the fishing rod in Dennis's house.
"Wow," said Dennis. "Pull her in here. She will know what to do."
"No," said Adrian, and he swished and swooped, trying to make her lose her grip.
"Why not?" said Dennis, and he lunged at Adrian.
The boys tumbled to the ground, and Adrian lost hold of the fishing rod. It flew out of his hands and landed at the side of the pool, with something strange attached to the other end. The boys got up and looked at what had been caught. It was a wig that seemingly belonged to old Mrs. Stratton.
"My mother never wore a wig," said Dennis, suddenly concerned.
I was pleased to hear from Adrian Smith this week.
"Hi, I'm Adrian Smith. As you may know, I've got a book out this month. I'd like to thank everybody who's been supportive about the book for all the pre-orders. I'm very grateful. I wrote this book 2 years ago, and I've been writing ever since. But it's still exciting to me, and you may have seen me opening a box full of books on the Twitter. You saw my reaction, and it's a good job there was a photographer there to show that. Very good. A bit like those TV dramas. I always think it's a coincidence that the cameraman happens to be there when some of the key action occurs. But anyway, I'm not on this podcast to promote my book, which comes out in a few weeks, and it's available from all good bookstores and online suppliers. Anyway, as I said, you're here for my children's book that I'm currently writing. It's in draft form, work in progress. So, yeah, any feedback, please pass it on. Chapter 10, The Longest Day. While Adrian and Dennis made curious discoveries in a snow-filled forest, Bruce, Steve, Dave and Nico were discussing plans to find their great chum, and Dennis. They were eating sandwiches in Nico's garden and were discussing how they would look for the truth. Bruce and Steve told the others that they had decided to go and visit old Mrs. Stratton that evening and ask her some questions, as they had got nothing out of Officer Riggs.
"Do you want to come with us?" asked Steve.
"I'd better not," said Dave. Just before Nico could answer, his mother came shrieking out of the house, waving the afternoon newspaper.
"Another child has gone missing," she said, thrusting the front page in front of the children.
They all looked. "Third child disappears," said the headline, with a picture of a boy they knew from school. It was Paul Diano.
"Apparently he went missing before Dennis did," said Nico, reading the article.
"His parents said he often ran away, but would come back after a few days, so they didn't report it straight away." Dave began to cry. He thought about how happy he was just a few weeks ago. It was like another life. He wished he could go back. He so longed to see Adrian again.
"Right," said Nico's mother. "You're not to go anywhere without me or your father."
Nico looked sad and tapped out a melancholy drum roll. "Looks like I won't be joining you two tonight," he said. Bruce and Steve were more frightened after this latest news, but knew that they had to speak to old Mrs. Stratton.
At least they would be together. That evening, they approached the Stratton residence and knocked on the door.
"Can I help you?" asked old Mrs. Stratton warily as she held the door open.
"Hello, Mrs. Stratton," said Bruce politely. "May we talk to you about Dennis?"
"You'd better come in," came the reply.
They walked through the hallway, unaware that Adrian had walked these very steps once before. They all sat down in the lounge.
"Would you like some iced lemonade?" she asked.
"Oh, yes, please," chorused the boys. At last, they were all sat down, ready to talk.
"He was a wonderful boy," said old Mrs. Stratton, looking at a photograph of Dennis. "Everyone says that about their son, of course, but he was so clever, brighter than 1,000 suns."
Bruce and Steve nodded.
"Can we have a look in his room?" asked Bruce, thinking this might be a good idea. They had asked Adrian's father this question, but he had refused. Perhaps old Mrs. Stratton might let them look around for clues.
"Yes, of course," she said, to their surprise. Bruce and Steve went and looked in Dennis's bedroom, but there was nothing unusual. Comics, toys, and lots of pencils crammed into a range of pie tins. They tried to open the wardrobe, but it was locked.
"Come on," said Steve. "There's nothing here."
They said goodbye to old Mrs. Stratton and decided to take a longer route home so they could think about things. It had been a long day.
"It's all very curious," said Steve.
"Yes," said Bruce.
"Do you think..."
"Shh," said Steve suddenly and pointed ahead. They were quite close to the village police station and Bruce looked to see what Steve was pointing at. Coming out of the police station was old Mrs. Stratton. She looked a bit different to usual, as she was wearing a large hat.
"But she can't have got here so quickly," whispered Bruce.
"Hi, this is Adrian Smith. Sorry I've missed a week with reading, although I don't think I'll be reading every week. I had to do a bit of promotion for my new fishing book, which hopefully you've all received or read by now. I notice it's number one in the coarse fishing category on Amazon, so that's good, in the bestsellers. For some reason it's in golf as well, in the golf category. Disappointingly, I'm currently number 1,515 in the overall Amazon chart. I've not been into the shops, Waterstones, because of the pandemic, of course. But it's been quite good sitting in, and I found it difficult to take my eyes off the bookshelf with my book sitting on it, nestled between Shakespeare and the historical fiction writer Wilbur Smith. I keep my books in alphabetical order. I don't have too many, but I think it's important for a sense of order. Anyway, this week I'm back with my children's book. The focus is on that. So here we go. Chapter 11, The Aftermath. Adrian stood at the side of the pool, holding up the wig that he had caught with his magic fishing rod.
"So you say this doesn't belong to your mother?" he asked Dennis.
"No," came the response. Things were very strange, thought Adrian. In fact, they were fishy. But he didn't chuckle at this pun, like he normally would have. The images they had seen in the pool had disappeared, and all that was left was calm water.
"I think we should move on," said Adrian, pointing to where the path continued after this clearing.
Dennis nodded, confused tears in his eyes. They continued along the new path, and the snow gradually disappeared to reveal more autumnal colours on the trees.
"Look," said Dennis, pointing to a squirrel.
It was standing, looking at them, next to a small white ball. They walked slowly towards the squirrel, who hopped away into the wood, and stopped again, just ahead, next to another white ball. Adrian picked the ball up.
"Looks like a marble," he said, and put it in his pocket.
"I think the squirrel wants us to follow it. Come on."
They followed the squirrel deep into the wood, following this trail of white balls.
After about 25 of these balls, something told Adrian to put one in his mouth.
"Gobstoppers," he said.
"Why is there a trail of gobstoppers in the wood?" asked Dennis. But nobody answered. They followed the gobstopper trail for a while longer, until it finally stopped at a small hut. The hut was made out of sweets.
The boys couldn't believe it.
Never in their wildest dreams had they seen such a thing.
Jellies, said Adrian.
Lollipops, said Dennis,
and the boys started to scoff some of the outer walls. Licorice laces, cinder toffee, and lashings of other fine treats.
After a while, they both felt sick.
I wonder who lives here, asked Dennis.
Adrian was annoyed with himself. He was so excited by all the sweets, he didn't think about this.
Maybe the owner would be annoyed that they had just eaten a lot of the exterior.
As the boys thought, the front door opened.
Watcher, came a familiar voice.
It was Paul Diano.
What are you doing here? Asked Adrian.
They sat and listened as Paul Diano told a tale of pixies, portals, and gobstoppers.
He had a reputation for telling grand tales and exaggerating, but Adrian felt he might be telling the truth this time.
We found your trail of gobstoppers, he said proudly.
Ah, yes, said Paul Diano.
That is very important, as I have no idea how to get back to the path without it.
Adrian felt sick again. He realized he had saved all the gobstoppers in his pockets to eat later, and now they were deep in the forest with no idea how to get back to the path.
I'm pleased to say that Adrian Smith's been back in touch, and here's another extract from his children's book that he's writing.
Hi, this is Adrian Smith, and I'm here to read another chapter from my children's book that I'm writing. It doesn't have a title, and in fact, I'm considering not having a title. I think that might be quite cutting edge in the world of children's literature. Maybe the cover will just have a symbol on it, or maybe just a blank page. The dilemma I have there, of course, is what colour to have that blank page. So sadly, there are still too many choices. Chapter 12, The Mystery Deepens. It had been a long day, and Officer Riggs had finally finished his shift. As he left the police station, he saw Bruce and Steve waiting outside. Those damned children, he muttered, not for the first time. The boys didn't know he felt like this, as he approached them with his usual jovial manner.
What can I do for you? He asked.
Please, sir, started Bruce, politely. We just saw old Mrs. Stratton leave the station, and wondered if there was any news. It's police business, said Officer Riggs with a chuckle. I don't think you should be bothering Mrs. Stratton, as she's clearly very distressed with all this. She's been in to see me twice today, and is clearly forgetting things. I'm very worried about her. He giggled with less vigour than usual to show this concern. Bruce thought to himself, could there be two old Mrs. Strattons? It was strange that they had just left her house after speaking to her, and then they saw her leaving the police station. The only difference was a large hat. Anyway, it must be past your bedtimes, said the policeman. You should try and stay indoors at this dangerous time. And he rode off on his bicycle. The boys went home. Minds were all confusion. Had they defied the law by not telling Officer Riggs what they had done and what they were thinking of? The next morning, the four chums were gathered round Nico's house. Bruce had come to the conclusion that there must be two old Mrs. Strattons and that Officer Riggs hadn't thought of this. He mentioned this theory to the others. Nico jumped off his chair and skipped around the room, banging his drum in a frantic manner. This continued for 5 minutes. Sorry, he said finally, and sat down.
Should we follow old Mrs. Stratton? Said Dave, hoping nobody would suggest that he did it.
That's not a bad idea, said Steve. I think we should tell Officer Riggs our theory as well.
Maybe it's best that me and Bruce do that, as we saw him last night.
That means you two can follow old Mrs. Stratton.
I can't go anywhere without me mum and dad, said Nico. Davy boy will have to do it all alone.
Dave began to cry, but he was willing to do this for his chum, Adrian.
He wondered what Adrian was doing. Was he trapped in a prison cell with no food or water? Stranded in space or lost without trace?
As it happened, at this moment, in a different world, Adrian was eating delicious treats from the walls and windows of Paul Diano's gingerbread house and using his fishing rod to hook dolly mixtures down from the chimney. He was having a brief moment of enjoyment, trying not to visualize the horrors that lay ahead.
Hi, I'm Adrian Smith. You may know me as a writer. I'm currently number one in the bestseller charts on Amazon, in golf and fly fishing,
and you may also know me as a guitarist for Iron Maiden. I've been reading extracts from a book I've been writing for children, and here we are, another chapter for you. I had a comment recently from someone called Cousin Joey, and he said, did I know that the characters in the book have got the same names as the members of Iron Maiden? And that tickled me somewhat. Yeah, I was aware. Thank you. I've also decided that the book should come out as a cassette, so you can get the book and cassette as a package. A bit like the Iron Maiden packages you can order, where you get vinyl, DVDs, CDs, T-shirts, lanyards, all sorts of goodies. I'm thinking of doing the same in my book. Maybe a Kickstarter version will have a book and cassette. So the reading I'm about to do will be coming from the cassette version, unlike the previous readings you've heard. So there may be some slight differences. What I should say to prepare you for those differences is... in fact, I'll just play the bit that's at the beginning of the cassette. When you hear Nico drum like this...
Oi! Oi!
Turn the page. Chapter 13, The Edge of Darkness. Dave shivered. He wasn't cold, but he was nervous, stood outside old Mrs. Stratton's house, waiting for her to come out so he could follow her. He didn't like the fact that he was doing this alone, so he had brought the rabbit that Adrian had won for him on the hooker duck stand at the fairground. How he missed his chum! Looking at the rabbit made a tear come to his eye. It was like an age of innocence had been lost. Ah, but here comes old Mrs. Stratton now, with her bag on wheels. She must be going shopping, thought Dave, and followed her at a distance up the hill.
Oi! Oi!
Back in the enchanted forest, Paul, Dennis and Adrian had fallen asleep after a busy day eating sweets from Paul Diano's gingerbread house. Dennis had impressed the others with the amount of toffee slabs he could eat at once. He was chewing for hours. Adrian seemed concerned, as these slabs were the roof tiles, and it would leave them exposed if it was a cold night. Luckily, Adrian was able to settle down to sleep and dreamed of being with his old chums, swimming in the park, laughing and splashing, and, oh, he awoke with a start. It was raining heavily, and the water was pouring through the holes in the roof where the toffee slabs once were, and flooding the gingerbread house. He shouted to the others, and they woke up just as the house was washed away, and the boys were carried out into the wild torrent, their beds like rafts speeding through the forest. At last the water subsided, and they found themselves back at the edge of the forest, near the pool of water, where they had caught the wig of old Mrs. Stratton.
Oi! Oi!
Old Mrs. Stratton walked quite slowly, and Dave had no problem keeping a watch on her. She went to the fishmonger's, then the butcher, and then she posted some letters. Dave noted all this down in a jotter in case it was important. Then she went to the park, and she sat on a bench feeding the ducks. It sounded like she was talking to them. She must be lonely, thought Dave, sitting down on a nearby grassy bank. He shed a tear at this emotional thought. The adventure had made Dave tired, and he was annoyed to find himself woken up by some boys playing ball nearby. He looked at the bench and found that old Mrs. Stratton had moved on. Oh no, he thought, I can't even do this simple task to help Adrian. As he started to blubber, he saw old Mrs. Stratton over by the playground. She was having a go on the swings. This was strange, thought Dave. She then ran off towards the exit. There was no bag on wheels, and Dave saw that she had a hat on. He must have been asleep for ages, he thought, and so he followed her.
Oi! Oi!
She walked with a quicker pace than before. Dave remembered that Bruce had said there may be two old Mrs. Strattons. This couldn't be true, surely. But now Dave thought that perhaps he was following a different old Mrs. Stratton to the one he had seen earlier. The weather was turning cold, and there was a hint of rain in the sky. Old Mrs. Stratton skipped into a nearby wood. As she went down the footpath, she produced a flute and started to play a merry tune. All the woodland creatures appeared at once and followed her in a long line, dancing with delight. Dave wondered if he was still dreaming. He felt like he should turn back and tell Bruce and Steve what had happened, but the scene seemed to mesmerize. He couldn't avert his eyes. Onward he followed, drawn in by this spectacle. Suddenly, old Mrs. Stratton jumped in the air and disappeared.
Dave ran to where she had stood, ignoring the complaining noises from the badgers and squirrels, who had formed a makeshift conga line. Where could she have gone? Somewhere into the great unknown.
Oi! Oi!
Paul, Dennis and Adrian got out of their beds and approached the pool. I've been looking for this, said Paul Diano. I've heard it's a link back to the real world. Suddenly, the water bubbled, and with a sploosh, out popped old Mrs. Stratton, carrying a flute and grinning at the boys. Mother, said Dennis, hurrying towards her. No, said Adrian, who tried to reach out for Dennis to stop.
End of part 1.